Welcome to another episode of the Jimmy Rec Show. Today on the podcast, I have Mr. Jeff Fenster, and he is the CEO of Everbowl. And for those of not familiar with Everbowl, you will be soon because they have over 300 franchises sold now. His entrepreneur story is an amazing one. I'm actually probably going to disclose this, an investor in Everbowl in the corporate, so I believe in what he's doing, and has over 60 stores already in operation. If you guys have never tried it out, especially you in Utah, you need to go immediately to Everbowl. It's the best acai / health bowl you'll ever have in your life. So without further ado, let's get to the show with Mr. Jeff Fenster. Dude, good to be here with you, man.
Thanks for having me, man. Good to have you in San Diego.
Yeah, dude, this is quite the operation you've got with, you know, it's fun. I love doing tours of businesses and especially ones like this where you guys are got so many different moving pieces going on. I mean, you just showed me the four or five different companies. You guys make all the sets of the all of the stores here on site. You're working everything with Everbowl. But, dude, that's a lot of things, a lot of balls they have in the air.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it sounds complicated and it sounds complex, but when you zoom out, you see the picture, and it's all about vertical integration for me. It's one of the success formulas that I've used that not only I think entrepreneurship, the number one job of an entrepreneur is to stay in business, and the best way to stay in business is to always have options. And when you vertically integrate and you create these subsidiaries that amplify your main thing, it gives you opportunity and options that you don't even know are going to pop up yet, but it gives you that opportunity when those things happen. So there is a lot going on, but it is kind of it seems fragmented, but there is a reason for it.
Yeah, well, it's like you said, you know, I did the same thing with real estate. I bought into, you know, the title company, and then I started a company flipping homes. I started a company just buying investment properties because ultimately you're coming across these deals all the time. And one of my best lead sources with other real estate agents would just be like, hey, I got this house that needs to be flipped. I don't know what to do with it. So just by starting that side company, you know, you're making a very, very good, almost as much as I was making as an agent, just flipping homes on the side, you know, had a partner with that. So it kind of all goes together. I've done a little bit of the same thing with my podcast studio. And in fact, you'll appreciate this. I just wanted to supplement my employee that makes my podcast and does all my reels and TikToks. And, you know, I'm paying him $7,000-$8,000 a month. So I was like, okay, maybe if I just have him start a podcast studio and I can get enough other people to come in. And we actually made our first profit last month from the studio after a year open. And so the whole reason I wanted that studio was simply to pay for that guy. So I'm not paying out of pocket every month.
So smart. I mean, that's it, right? As entrepreneurs, we're sitting there looking at opportunity. And when you are running your main business and you realize that you have repeatable things that you're outsourcing and it's the same thing again and again and again and again, like if you're renting a podcast studio and you're doing enough of them and you pay a guy and you have the setup, having your own just enables you to take care of it on your own dime and own schedule now. So you don't have to hope to get it scheduled, et cetera. You get to customize it and then you get to monetize it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden now you're going to make money from your podcast studio, and who knows how big that will be.
Yeah. Well, you didn't start in entrepreneur space. So you started as a lawyer. Is that correct?
Yeah, law school.
Well, it's kind of funny because when I was little, I wanted to be a lawyer. And then I look at it now, I would have been the most miserable lawyer ever because I hate paperwork. I hate all the little details. Like, I mean, a lawyer's real job is to look at the fine print. I mean, 90% of law work is really just finding the easy, you know, either making it or finding it or whatever else and just, you know, going through all that. I was watching A Few Good Men and I'm like, yeah, I want to be a lawyer, you know.
I think we all did in that movie.
So, well, for me though, I would have been a miserable lawyer. So I'm so grateful I didn't ever go that route. For you, at what point did you decide to make that shift from like, okay, I'm going to be a lawyer to now I'm going to go into business?
My third year of law school, so I was going to be a sports agent. That was the path. Had a job lined up with Lee Steinberg Sports Agency, and I was going to be Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
You know, that was what I was going to be. Couldn't play professional sports. I figured, let me still be associated with sports. And I met my fiance, and who's now my wife, and we had a little daughter that when I met my fiance, she had a little daughter. She was an infant, and fell in love, so now I became immediately a dad. And my third year of law school, and realized I didn't want to travel the world representing grown-ups. I wanted to be a present dad. I wanted to be home. And so at that moment, I realized, uh-oh, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. So I graduated law school, six figures in law school loans, and no idea what the hell I was going to do with life. So I got a job.
So you never actually went into law once you graduated law school?
I was a certified intern at the public defender's office for 6 months, okay. But no, never.
It probably helps you a lot in business, though. I mean, you're doing something, especially right now, you're franchising your company. I mean, you got, you know, all these different, I mean, all you do is have paperwork written up, and it's probably nice to be able to read it yourself.
Yeah, you still don't trust yourself to do that.
For sure.
You know, I'm still going to pay a lawyer.
Yeah.
But what it actually does, and I think if I could, I could suggest that people go to law school for one reason, it's for the analytical approach. Because what's really cool about law school is the exams are not traditional like collegiate and high school stuff where it's like, did Bobby cross the road? Yes or no. It's, did Bobby cross the road? Argue both sides. Mm. And so you have to continuously put yourself in the side of the argument that you actually don't believe in and build a compelling argument or case with a set of facts and display it. So what that does in business is it allows you to see what your adversary or what your person you're negotiating with may be thinking and be understanding and empathetic of their position, build a position on that side. And then if you can do that on both angles as a business owner, you can manipulate that to your benefit.
Wow. And just in general in life, that's such a good thing to be able to go through that exercise and have that. Yeah, I know it's funny. I interviewed recently a sports agent on my podcast, and he did like the contract for Austin Riley, and he helped with Pujols and some of these bigger ones back in the day. And you know, it's funny. I was friends with a couple professional athletes, and to be their agent, like you're just at their beck and call. I mean, you were a bitch boy for at least 10 years before you ever really get much going. I mean, I looked at that because it was one of those things that kind of intrigued me too. You know, I read a book called A Shark Never Sleeps by Drew Rosenhaus.
Yeah. One of my favorite books.
Same. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a good business book. And I remember reading that. I was like, oh, that would be fun. And then I started thinking about what they actually do. And I'm like, oh man, I definitely would not have done well with that. But well,
I'm so glad, by the way, you mentioned that book because you're the only other person I know who's ever read it. And that is literally one of my top three favorite books.
Oh, same. It's one of the five books I recommend to anybody getting into business. It just, he wrote it when he was in college, and just the mentality that he had as he's writing this book, you're like, this freaking guy, but he pulled it off.
He pulled it off.
And he knew he was going to pull it off before he ever did. And that's why it's such a powerful book.
It's so good. Like, if you haven't read it, read this book.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's one of those ones I like to give to people because no one's ever heard of it. Uh-huh. Same thing. But, well, so where'd you go first? What was your first entrepreneur thing? Were you kind of, did you have an idea where to go with business from being younger, or did you just kind of opportunity come across your table?
So graduated law school, six figures in law school loans, a kid, a fiance, and no idea. So I got a job like everyone normally would, and it was 2007, so entrepreneurship really wasn't something to be glorified. There were business owners and there were employees, and you were a business owner because you had a family business to go into or you'd been doing something long enough. So I got a job selling payroll for ADP, the payroll company.
Mm-hmm.
First 6 months there, fortunately figured out with my background in sales, I was the number one sales rep in the country, sold First to Make Presence Club, made six figures, made $250,000, was living life, golfing 3 days a week. I was like, I'm just going to do this forever. And I was making $38,000 base pay, and I had this commission structure, which was really terrible. So once I hit the highest level, it starts back over. But because I did it in 6 months, I was supposed to get a $17,000 base pay increase and get to the next tier. But they said I had to wait to the end of the fiscal year. So it was January 2008. I had to wait till July of 2008 to make more money. So I was stuck in this like weird spot, and I went home and I just remember feeling like I was in jail. Like my whole life, I'm going to be sitting here waiting for some arbitrary date that I can advance.
A terrible pay structure. I mean, totally incentivizes you from doing more.
And their argument was, you're an outlier. Nobody does annual stuff in 6 months, Jeff. So
yeah, but you make exceptions for the outlier so you don't lose your talent.
That's what I thought. So what did I do at 24? I went into my manager's office, Ashley, with an ego and said, give me my bonus and give me a raise or I quit. And they let me quit.
Wow.
I thought there was no way they'd let me walk out the door. And instead they were like, listen, it is what it is here. You know, this is a multi-billion-dollar international company. And I was just a 24-year-old punk. So they let me leave. So I went home that day, sold my house that I had just bought, moved my wife, or at this time still fiance and daughter, into my parents' house and started my first payroll company with a buddy out of my mom's kitchen.
Well, the nice thing is once you have that skill, though, I mean, you learned the same thing I learned when I was 21. I was selling meat door to door, and my first day on the doors, I made like $300-$400, and it changed my life forever because I knew my worst case scenario, I could sell, and I could sell really well. I was going to make six figures doing something. And so like at that point, you kind of have your world open to you a little bit. You're like, okay, I'm not selling this anymore, but I know I can go make several hundred. I mean, when you said number one in the country and you only made $250,000, I kind of like, I was like, wait, you got a shit product.
Yep.
You know?
That's the problem with selling payroll.
Yeah. And so where did you decide to pivot from there?
I started a payroll company because I knew I could sell payroll. I didn't know how to run a business. So we started this. We're dumbasses, 24-year-olds, made tons of mistakes. Grew it, raised private equity, scaled it, built an HRIS platform because the internet was really starting to take footing. And there's a lot of HR departments that were still using, you know, pull-out folder filing cabinets and paper. So we helped digitize that and create what was called a HRIS system. Sold the company in 2011. Simultaneously, I had started a recruiting agency because I started my business at the height of the recession, the Great Recession, 08 to 11. Tough time to do business. But what I learned during that was people needed employment. So I started a recruiting agency and was able to sell that off. Then in 2012, I spent a lot of time learning or failing, your choice, whichever word you want to use. But it was a couple businesses that I just tried things and was really trying to step outside of that little space I was in and realized you can't. I started a company called Equity Circle, and the idea was to legalize equity-based crowdfunding because I was tired of private equity and VC, and I thought every entrepreneur should be able to raise micro-investments from tons of people rather than have to get this professional money. And so we started a change.org petition. We were on the front of the cause, you know, leading the charge, and it legalized. And then I realized I didn't have a really cool platform, and we helped legalize this thing, and then I lost all the
nothing to use it for.
Nothing to do it with, yeah. So you learn. And then started a digital marketing agency with my partner, with a guy named Neil Patel, who you know. Met him through Relationship Capital, and that's how I've always sold. So I used Relationship Capital to quickly be associated with one of the best digital marketers in the world without even knowing how to use a computer.
Was he known how he is now back then?
Differently, but yes.
He was already.
He had already co-founded Kissmetrics and Hello Bar and Crazy Egg. And Pat Flynn, who was a friend of mine, had a big website. And I said, Pat, teach me the internet. And he goes, dude, I don't teach the internet. So you got to meet Neil. Connect me with Neil. It's a funny story. You'll appreciate this. So I get this introduction from Pat. And Pat's website's called smartpassiveincome.com. And I say, Pat, I'll pay you 10 grand a month. Teach me how to use the internet. He goes, Jeff, I like you, but my website's called Smart Passive Income. I don't do that. You should meet Neil Patel. I'm like, who's Neil Patel? And he said, if you don't know Neil, you should know Neil. So Google him. So I did. And he's like, I'll make an intro. So he made an intro, and I have this meeting with Neil. And I'm like, okay, Neil probably gets hit up by 100 me's all the time. How am I going to stand out? So I leaned into what I know how to do. And I went and I sold a digital marketing client, a six-figure contract, without even having Neil. I went to them and I said, listen, we're going to make our money helping you. So whatever, I want a percentage of every new dollar I bring up to your business from the internet, and I'm going to bring in Neil Patel, and we're going to do it. And they said, okay. So I pay you nothing? I said, not unless we're successful. Great. So I went to Neil, and I said, the first thing I said to him is, hey, dude, I have a check for you with your name on it. It's $150,000. Where do I send it? And he said, wait, what? And I said, yeah, I sold our first client together. I have a check for you for $150K because I was going to pay it anyway.
Sure.
And then he was like, no, wait. And it was just like confusing. And so we ended up meeting. We ended up becoming friends. We ended up working together. I ended up selling clients, and we made a bunch of money, and we worked with some of the biggest websites on the internet. And in 2015, sold off our clients, and he spun up Neil Patel Digital, which is a amazing digital marketing agency today. And I was kind of semi-retired, driving my wife and kids crazy, and they said, go do something you're passionate about. And so I started Everbull.
Wow. So at that point, I mean, you sold off multiple companies. That's kind of the entrepreneur thing to do, right?
Yep.
You're one of those serial entrepreneurs that likes to just keep on going and going. I'm kind of the same. I get bored easy. Even when I was selling real estate full time, I had three side companies going always, right? Because when I get bored working on my job or my career, I can just go work on this side thing I'm working on, whether it was throwing a party or a trip or an event or whatever it was. That's where I got good at kind of doing with the stuff I do now, is I just was always throwing events and parties because I would get bored at work, but I didn't want to stop working. And so those early exits were, a lot of entrepreneurs say, you know, the mistake I made is I sold too many companies too quick. I didn't, you know, you really want to put your head down, kind of like what you're doing with Everbull now. You want to really dive into something for 8 to 10 years where you can grow it and have one massive company. In hindsight, would have you done it different, or were you just kind of, because you didn't know what you didn't know, you had to go through those to kind of get to the Everbull spot?
I wouldn't have done them different because I do have entrepreneurial ADD. Mm-hmm. I like startups. It's where I'm really good. I like, if you and me are sitting here and we have a little concept or idea and you want to go turn it into something, that's my passion. When it gets too big or too optimized and now it's like we're playing in the margins, I'm not the best fit anymore. And so I sold those, or, you know, some of them were, well, my first company, private equity, helped me decide to sell. Mm. Full disclosure, I didn't want to sell our payroll and HR company, but the private equity firm that had control told us we were selling. So that was a forced sale. Made some money, but it was a forced sale.
Yeah.
Set you up. Enough money to make me very comfortable.
Okay.
I'm not sitting on a beach the rest of my life, but I'm definitely not running to go get a job tomorrow.
Yeah.
The internet marketing stuff, what I learned there is that was never a passion. Mm. You know, I think the main thing for me is what I'm doing now with vertical integration, I get to keep starting companies inside of my ecosystem. So I hired a brand president, Trevor, to run Everbull now, and I got it to a point, but now I have an expert taking us to the next point. So I'm still helping every day inside of the Everbull ecosystem, but I'm doing it on the peripheral. I'm building out WeBuild, which is one of our vertically integrated arms. I'm building out Unevolved Studios, which we're sitting in. I'm doing a bunch of things with Unevolved products and sourcing. We sell product on QVC. We're building the superfood brand. So I get to do all these fun startup, more startup style stuff, mm-hmm. which keeps me engaged because like you, I get bored as well. And I believe success is one of the formulas is you have to be passionate about what you're doing.
Yeah.
And if I'm bored or I'm not the best person to do it, I don't have an ego. I'll be the dumbest guy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Let me bring smart people in who are better at it than me. And I owe it to my shareholders and my investors to do that. And so I plan on building this one for that massive, massive, massive exit. I mean, I've had a 7-figure exit. I've had an 8-figure exit. I want a 9-figure exit or a 10-figure exit.
So before we get into, because I mean, Everbull, you're on your way, you know, with what everything is going on. But I want to kind of first start at the beginning. How did you decide Everbull? Like, why it's such a random thing from what you've been doing, right? And the food space has so many variables and so many, you know, it's got good name but bad name, and you know, and so how, why Everbull?
Well, I never wanted to own a restaurant, and I know nothing about restaurants. And the day I actually told my, I was out to dinner with my wife and my parents, and I said, I'm going to start this restaurant, Everbull, and my dad said, are you nuts? 9 out of 10 restaurants fail. And my mom said, you don't know how to cook. And my wife jokingly said, all you do in the kitchen is eat and make a mess. So they're all right. But why do 9 out of 10 restaurants fail? Because 9 out of 10 restaurants are started by chefs.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
why.
It's, yeah, they're not entrepreneurs.
They're not business owners.
Right.
Whether it's a restaurant, a construction company, a real estate firm, a meat firm, a payroll and HR company, a dental office, that's cool. But they all still have an underlying business behind them. And if you don't know how to do P&Ls, and you don't know how to raise money, you don't know how to build culture, and you don't know how to hire and train and deliver on services and fulfill, it doesn't matter. The business will fail no matter how amazing you are. We all know that restaurant where that great chef, great food, why did it go out of business? Because they don't understand COGS.
Mm.
They don't understand how to control their expenses.
Mm.
They don't understand how to market. I'm good at that stuff. So the what I do is less important because I understand how to build a team that can scale a business. So I knew that first and foremost. And why restaurants and why Everbull is because I'm a hypochondriac. I'm afraid of illness. I think superfoods and what we eat every day and lifestyle is the number one precursor for good health. And, you know, modern science is showing that 80% of the diseases that are plaguing Americans, from heart disease, stroke, obesity, cancer, diabetes, hypertension, all those things, 80% of them are preventable or delayable with lifestyle.
Well, dude, when you start thinking about, I mean, I travel a lot, so I get a lot of different diets from around the world and stuff like that. Like, the game is kind of rigged against Americans on eating right now. It's really sad when you dig into it. There's a couple good documentaries out there, but I think the latest number is 87% of Americans are overweight and 44% are obese.
Yeah.
It's a crazy number. And when you start thinking about that, that's when you know it's a systemic problem where, I mean, it's really hard to eat healthy. It's really hard to, it's really expensive for mm-hmm. people too. And so, you know, unfortunately, most people, I mean, you go and you see how people are eating and what their diet consists of. I've gotten a lot more intentional the last few years about kind of what I mean. I keep on knocking one thing off or changing one thing here, you know, and anyway, but it is those that are aware of it, it's really almost like rigged against the people that don't. And so
right.
I guess as part of your mission with Everbull, as much education as much as it is getting something, a product that people can eat. Because like Jamba Juice, for example,
sure.
Here's how ridiculous marketing is. I used to get one every day my first 5 years on my real estate career. Almost every day I'd have my assistant bring me one thinking I was starting my day with something healthy.
Sure.
It's like 90 grams of sugar to start my day. I basically took down 6 Snicker bars to start my day. That's like a real thing.
Yeah.
And I had no idea because I'm just thinking, yeah, fruit, healthy. Mm-hmm. I had no idea.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It is programmed against us. We are living in a society in America where fast food, the average American eats fast food 3.2 times a week. That's a lot of fast food. That's mm-hmm. why McDonald's is so big. And Everbull was built to reverse engineer those. It was affordable, filling, delicious, and accessible. If I can solve those four excuses that people make, that is why we choose unhealthy options. You can ask anyone, why are you eating that? Oh, it's cheap.
Yeah, it's quick.
It's filling. It tastes good. Mm-hmm. Or I can get it. I'm in a hurry.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
it. So Everbull was reverse engineered to solve those four excuses. And by solving those four excuses, I think I can put Everbull in front of consumers where they're going to skate to where the puck's going to quote Wayne Gretzky.
Mm.
And people want to eat healthy. To your point, I think I'm eating healthy. I want to make good choices.
Mm-hmm.
But either I can't afford it, I don't like the taste, it won't fill me up, or I can't get it. So That's what we're solving every day. That's my mission, is to help everyone, what we use the word called unevolve. It's a word we trademarked and created. It means to live actively and eat stuff that's been around forever. Be the best version of yourself. Unevolve your lifestyle.
Well, that's kind of like what's becoming popular, because people are seeing, like, our ancestors, they were healthy. They walked around with good bodies. Have you ever seen the beach pictures of, like, 1970 versus today? Like,
yes.
It's really sad. So I actually had an eye-opening moment the other day. I was on a cruise just last week. I went to a cruise to the Caribbean, Southern Caribbean. And, I mean, if you've been on a cruise, you can see these aren't your most health-conscious people sitting around that cruise ship. We'll just say that. There's the people that get off the cruise every day. But if you ever go back at, like, 2 or 3 on one of your excursion days and just walk around the cruise in the pool, it's crazy, dude, like, just how overweight everyone is. I had this moment, and because I've kind of played, I play what I call red light, green light. Like, when I will never let myself get over a certain weight. I kind of play within this margin. But then I started thinking, I'm like, you know what? I'm done with this. I was like, I hate to say this, but I was kind of grossed out. Like, I sound like such a dick, I'm sure, but I was really grossed out. And I was like, I'm going to make health the number one priority. And so I've been doing intermittent fasting every day since. Yep. I'm 14 days in about now, and 12 days in, and I'm down like 7 pounds already. And I'm going to get to my exact weight. And it's like, no, like, but my point is like, a lot of the ways that you do that is, but you have to be cooking. You have to be getting your greens in. You have to go for walks every day is one thing that I implemented about 1.5 years ago. And even getting your shoes off and walking on the bare grass, like, you know, this
grounding,
unevolving kind of concept, right? Like, all these things, because the way that they've pitched it, it's so sad. It's like, here, we're going to give you stuff that makes you unhealthy. And then we're going to give you the cure for it. I mean, just what they did with same thing with, like, COVID, but it's the same thing they do with food. It's like, here, eat this bullshit, and then once you feel terrible, eat this to feel better.
And don't move.
And don't move.
Right? That technology makes it so we don't have to move.
That was literally the day I knew COVID was bullshit, when they started saying that you weren't able to go outside and exercise. That was the day I was like, hold on. That was literally, and not to go on, that thing's well over by now, but the point is like, when the people in charge are telling you these things, it's really crazy. And, you know, then you kind of start to see how the game's rigged with the drug companies and the food companies and everything in between. And, like, there's a really good story. Like, when Michelle Obama first came into the White House, she wanted to change all of that. She was going to really focus on the diet and the food. Within 6 months, everything went to exercise.
Yep. Or
because she realized the food companies were never going to let that happen.
You can't beat those lobbyists.
No.
I mean, what's crazy is I can get a hamburger for 25 cents sometimes at McDonald's. 80 cents. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, literally, even today, $1. I can get a burger. Yeah. I can get fries.
Double cheeseburger.
But if you want lettuce or an avocado, it's $2.50. You're like, what? An avocado? That's just picked off of a plant. This was an actual physical animal that had to be fed, raised, slaughtered, packaged, shipped cold, brought to a place, and then cooked. The avocado was picked off of a tree and peeled. Like, if you think about how much lack of resources went into actually making an avocado to your plate comparatively to a cow.
Yeah.
And yet, not, and I'm not vegan. I eat meat.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, it's crazy that for the price variance. And one of the things that I always try to help people who always give me the excuse, yeah, you know, I want to lose weight. I just don't have time. Mm-hmm. I can't exercise. I don't have time. You don't have to go to the gym to exercise. The tricks that I do, and it works really well, especially if you're on the go, if it's 3 stories or less, take the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Imagine what happens if you do that every time. You don't take an escalator or an elevator 1 or 2 flights to your office. You take the stairs. If the average, I read this in a men's health magazine like 6 or 7 years ago. If the average American, 3 stories or less, takes the stairs instead of an elevator or an escalator, they'll lose 3 pounds a year on average.
That makes sense.
It's 3 pounds.
Well, even on the cruise, we were on the 8th floor. And I said, we're just going to use the stairs every time. We didn't use the elevator once.
Yep.
So that was one of our hacks, right?
Yep.
And just doing little things like that. So what I've been doing with my men's group, because, you know, if you just give it like 75 hard, you're going to have a bunch of people fall out. You know, we just did Bedros's 1-day Masogi challenge and everybody finished it. But if it was like a constant thing, it was way too difficult. It was like 1 day a year that thing's going to work. But what we do now is 100 pushups a day. That's kind of what the challenge is. Like, I challenge every guy because, A, it's on your mind. Like, last night, I got food poisoning. I wasn't feeling so hot. It was 11 o'clock. I'm like, oh, man, I got a problem in my hands. But I did my 100 pushups because I'm not about to break my streak. They've got 59 guys on a thread, and as soon as you don't do it, you have to take yourself off the thread. That's the way it goes until the last guy's standing. And so it's like, But just simple little things like that can make a big difference. So even like with acai bowls and with what you're doing, so you've really focused on the foods that are healthy and trying to give people a different experience. So why ever bowl food? Like people are trying to decide what's the difference between, you know, Jamba Juice or, I don't even know the other ones or whatever, or Everbowl. So what is it about Everbowl that makes it? Why, I mean, you guys are growing so fast, obviously doing a lot of things right, but what is it that makes Everbowl special?
Well, first, we source our own superfoods, and we make sure that we're bringing in high-quality nutrition. You know, I went down to Brazil myself. I worked with the local families down there. I understand how it's picked. I climbed a tree. I picked my own acai. And I did that because acai is very high in antioxidants. Mm-hmm. And why does that matter? Well, it matters for a whole host of medical reasons, but the truth is I'm building a business. And at the end of the day, I need to be in front of consumers. What do they care about? And consumers all want to look younger. And if you eat more antioxidants, you look younger. Mm. Here's your magic sauce. I'm almost 40. People think I'm in my 20s.
Yeah, you look good.
I have good, I don't have a ton of wrinkles. It's because I eat a lot of superfoods. It's not anything else. Like, you should be eating these foods, because if you do, you'll look younger. You'll feel younger. And when you do all those things, you feel better. So while I'm going to bring you good quality, tasty food, I'm also bringing something unique. I mean, 2016, when I started it, you couldn't get an acai bowl. Jamba Juice didn't have it on the menu. Mm-hmm. I was importing them into my house. And I was like, this is an opportunity. I mean, I'm a business owner also. So I saw opportunity. And I was like, I think this is going to take off. I think we can make something with this. But now, today, when we have a lot of Me Toos everywhere and you can get an acai bowl all these places, you come to Everbowl because we stand for what we stand for, which is to help everyone live an unevolved lifestyle. We provide quality nutrition, and we do it in a way that allows you to create and customize your own bowl and an experience that is unique. And the truth be told, I don't even care if you go to my competitors over me, because that's not who I'm competing with. I'm competing with the fast and the fried. I'm competing with McDonald's. I'm competing with Jamba Juice. Not Jamba Juice, McDonald's, Burger King, pizza. Sure. If you go to Jamba Juice as your entry point to superfoods, good.
Pretty good place to
go. If I'm in an airport, I'll go to Jamba Juice.
Gotcha.
Now, it's not what I want to eat every day,
Yeah. And you probably don't get the big shake or whatever, smoothie or whatever.
I try to customize a little bit because the syrups that some of the products that they have, but I think that there's a segment. And I think in order for any type of behavior or habit to stick, you have to win stack and you have to build habits. And the way you can do that is if you're eating McDonald's 3.2 times a week, how about you go to Jamba Juice once this week? Then next week, maybe try Everbowl once. And then maybe do Jamba Juice and then Everbowl until eventually it's just Everbowl. And maybe just shrink it down. Because one of the analogies I use for people trying to get in shape is they'll do this, and like you said, 75 hard, you're going to fall off because it's like, oh, I'm sitting on the couch, I'm obese, and now I'm going to go try to train for that 5K. Well, realistically, you're not. But what if today you just put on your gym clothes and watch Netflix? Mm. Can you do that? And then what if tomorrow you put on your gym clothes, you watch Netflix, but 5 minutes before the show, but you're done, you just walk or run to one mailbox? Can you do that? And the next day, can you put your gym clothes on and walk or run to two mailboxes? If you do that enough days, you're now running that 5K. Yeah. You're in shape. And everyone puts this, unfortunately, we put a time constraint on when things have to happen. I have to lose 20 pounds by next Tuesday. Well, okay, that might not happen. But you can lose the 20 pounds. You'll get there. You just got to build habits, and you got to win stack those habits. And so that's what Everbowl's also meant to be, is like, I'm not asking people to change their diet overnight and only eat Everbowl. How about you just eat Everbowl once this month? Can you do that? Or an Everbowl-like product.
Yeah.
You know, and if we open enough stores, it'll be Everbowl.
Well, and that's the thing is like, you know, our habits are what create us. I mean, and you talked about earlier, you know, what food we put in. This is why it's so important what kind of food we put in. If you really think about it, your body's made of two things. It's the food you put in it, and it's the thoughts that you have. That's literally what creates all of our cells. Like, that's it. It's the only two things going on, ultimately, that create a human being. And so you got to really watch what foods you put in and really watch what thoughts you have. I mean, that's, if you simplify it that much, you can break it down. And it really is that easy to change your entire cellular programming.
For sure. And it's crazy that if I went up to someone who was sickly obese, eating dog shit food, and I tried to put sugar in their gas spigot of their car, like if I opened up their gas can and tried to put sugar in it, they'd beat me up or call the cops. But they'll put yellow 7 in their body like it's nothing. And we'll eat chemicals that we just don't even know what they do. And we don't even care what they do because it's convenient. It's in a bright, pretty packaging, and it's tasty. And to your point, what we do on social media today and the negativity that we're following and the thoughts that we're putting in our minds don't allow us to thrive. Mm-hmm. And what I'm so fortunate is my peer group has elevated over the last 10 years to where now I'm around people like yourself, and I'm around high performers, which means, like you just said about your group, you're going to do your 100 push-ups because you're not getting off that thread.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put good thoughts in my head. I'm going to be the best version of myself because my peers are all high performers, and I love that energy. I love being in these circles. I love hanging with high-performing individuals, and I see the commonality. And so for everyone who wants to elevate their life, it is. It's putting new, better thoughts in their mind and eating better food and copy the people that you aspire to be like.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy because it's the same thing as I've really been able to, you know, dial in my friend group over the last 7, 8, 10 years. And I only want to be around people that are elevating me, people that inspire me. And it's funny because y'all find myself in these weird spots where I'm around people that aren't doing that. Mm-hmm. Like I went to the Chiefs Bengals playoff game and we're sitting down. I mean, it's on like the third row. So it was like, should have been people that were successful in some way in life, I guess, at least, you know, and we're sitting there. And the stuff that was coming out of everybody's mouths, and I'm like, are the Chiefs fans just the worst fans ever? If I finally just evolved where I'm finally noticing it, and I'm like, I think I just am noticing it. Mm-hmm. But it was embarrassing, the thoughts and ideas coming out of these people and like the shit they're yelling at people. And I mean, just brutally terrible, like negative stuff. And it hit me and I was like, wow. And so it was funny because this year the NCAA basketball tournament's going right now. And I went to go pick my bracket and I used to be all in on that. I mean, we used to throw a party for it. We used to sell every single team, we'd put it in a hat and you paid $5. You picked a team out. If their team won it all, you won all the money. I mean, we got into that thing. And I realized I go to pick out my bracket and I'm like, I can't name a single college basketball player this year. Mm-hmm. And it was this weird moment where I'm like, wow, like it's because the people you spend your time around, like I'm not doing surface things anymore. I'm around people that like yourself again, that are, you know, you're changing the world. You're doing cool things. You're inspiring people. You don't have time to worry about some random ass basketball game in Florida or Indiana or something. You just franchised over 300 different stores you've sold. You're working with, you know, all these different people and companies and ideas, and there's just no time for the bullshit stuff. And so I think like, it's a check on people of like, hey, are the people around you? And I think the word I like to use is inspire. Like, yeah. Do they inspire you? You know, like I'm talking to you and I'm like, damn, you know, it's like, I've been playing small or whatever. And I have these opportunities daily to be around people. Like yesterday, you know, I had Kent Clothier come speak to my men's group. He talks about time. It's our number one asset. And I was really cool. One of my guys pulled me aside afterwards and it really touched him to talk. And he was talking about in his company, he's got this decision. And if he makes... what is the, I guess you could say, like the decision that he probably, if he would be very justified in making the decision based on principle one way, yeah. But it will throw his life into chaos and these different things. And we talked about it and talked about the time aspect and how it would affect his family and all these different things. And by the end of it, he's like, wow, you're so right, man. He's going to end up, you know, it was a very big multiple 7-figure decision. And but what he ultimately decided was like, dude, that guy inspired me. It's time. It's with my family. It's these things. And he's going to make that decision because of that situation yesterday. But every day, we're either around people that are making us, inspiring us to be more, yep. Or we're around people that are, you know, encouraging us to play down.
Yeah. And you just said it. I mean, that is kind of the dichotomy. And it's never been more evident today when you have access to see into everybody's life so well with social media, that if you're looking at what people are sharing, posting, and what they're around, and they're not inspiring you, you need to help them get more inspired. If they're like, hey, it's my best friend, I've loved them since childhood, I'm not asking you not to be friends with them. I'm asking you to inspire them. Help them elevate. Be the change that they need to be around, because you're part of that circle, right? And I caught myself. I mean, I have a lot of my best friends are still from childhood. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them aren't doing what I believe they should be doing in life, because they are they're in that negative circle mentally, where they're just not seeing what they should be seeing. And it's tough because I love them. They're brothers. Mm-hmm. They're my true brothers. I mean, these guys I would lay in traffic for. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to elevate them as best I can. That's my mission, is not to cut them off, but I'm going to be spending most of my time in circles that inspire, and then I'm going to be the change for my group that's never going to get cut out.
Yeah, that's what I try to say, is like for every person I reach up to, I try to reach down to somebody, or yeah. Maybe try to pull them along with me, you know. And ultimately, at the end of the day, you can't change anybody. I think all you can do is inspire them and create situations where they can be inspired. That's yep. Kind of what I try to do with my life. But, dude, I want to hear, I mean, you have this huge deal with Everbowl, with Drew Brees. I yep. Do want to talk about that. How did that come about? What is the deal real quick so people understand? And then how did that deal come about? What a cool idea.
Yeah, so Drew is, full disclosure, is an investor in our company, as well as our largest franchisee. He owns 150 locations in 9 states. He's also now a brand ambassador, so he's obviously all in on the Everbowl train. But what happened was actually when COVID occurred, I had 28 corporate locations and he was still playing and we were trying to negotiate a brand ambassadorship. We never could make the economics work. It was back and forth. We just couldn't figure it out. And I was working with his agent and we never made it. Like it was like a year and a half of negotiating and we just couldn't find where we met. And then March 18th, 2020, COVID hit, California shut down. I had to temporarily close 28 stores, lay off 400 people and go home and tell my wife, hey, the business is over. That's it. I don't know what's going to happen because especially in San Diego, it was like, you're done.
Yeah.
Weren't allowed and no one knew at that moment. That was like day one. And me and my couple of my executives, we got in a room, even though none of us were getting paid. And we said, okay, we can. So I have this thing I do. It's called a 5-minute pity party. Mm-hmm. When things don't go my way like that, I set a timer on my phone for 5 minutes. I scream, I cry, I cuss. I feel like a victim. I stomp up and down. And when the alarm goes off, it's like, okay, I got that emotion out. Because too often we hold that for too long and we stay a victim. And I just have never been successful being a victim. So I don't know how to do it. So that's why I did that. I got through my pity party and it was like, okay, what are we doing now? And one of the guys on my team was like, hey, we have these products that we've manufactured. We could spin up a Shopify website and sell later bowls and deliver this product to people's houses. And we're like, that's a great idea. I mean, we have all this food. We have 28 basic kitchens around the city that are shut. So we did. So we spun up a Shopify website on March 20th. Called Later Bowls and started selling Later Bowls to our customers that were stuck at home. And we would deliver in our van and the three of us would get in the van every day and drive product all over these houses and just activity, right? Movement. Mm-hmm. Well, during that process, Drew Brees became a customer and we started delivering bowls to Drew, not knowing. And
he's then just literally just buying them off.
Yeah, buying Later Bowls and him and his sons were eating them at home.
Okay.
And then he started sending me text pictures of him making these bowls at home. And it was like awesome. Like it was really cool. And he fell in love with the product even more. And then he retired. And he came to me afterwards. He's like, look, I'm not playing anymore. I want to be an investor. I want to be a brand ambassador. And I want to open stores. Once we decided to franchise after COVID.
Yeah.
And so that's what happened. And so we were able to work a deal out very well that way. Because now he's a believer. And he was all in. And we could easily find alignment. And then he started with 15 stores. He opened his first one. It went really well. So he topped up to like 40. Then he topped up to 80. And just about a month ago, he just topped up to 150. So he's got 6 or 7 open right now and he's got 9 states and he's been an incredible business partner to have because of what we talked about, I think off air, but just successful people have a formula and his formula that worked to be a Super Bowl champion and how he analyzes situations, he applies in business now. And he's a franchisee of many concepts. He dominates in so many spaces and it elevates my game. It forces me to be better. Because I'm around someone who is vibrating at such a high frequency to our point of being around people who inspire. And his ability to remember things and focus on such small details is incredible. I mean, I almost see it like he's playing in a football game when we're having these conversations. He remembers like this one little thing we talked about 6 meetings ago or 6 conversations ago. And I'm like, I didn't even remember that. And I said it. So,
well, what a cool like person to be able to run things by too and be able to have as a resource, you know, I mean, owning over half of the franchise at this point, I guess.
Yeah.
So, well, dude, for those who have never been to Ever Bowl, you guys need to go. It's amazing. And it honestly tastes so damn good. Like I'm probably a once every 2 weeks kind of guy. I don't do breakfast very much. And so I was like, but I love to get it for lunch even or whatever, but it's amazing. So, well, dude, thank you for having this time with me and for being on the podcast. And I appreciate you. It's going to be fun. I'm your biggest fan because I'm an investor, like I said. I'm not like Drew Brees, but man, if I can ever help any way, let me know.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm a huge fan of your show, so it's always fun to come on the shows that I actually enjoy listening to. And, you know, you inspire me every day. So thank you for being you and the guests you bring on and have me on.
Thanks, man.
Thanks.
Thanks again for listening to this podcast. And this podcast was brought to you by Steve DeYoung over at Trillion Mortgage. I've sold thousands of homes in my real estate career, and there's nobody I trust more than Steve over at Trillion Mortgage. So reach out to him, give him a call if you are looking to refinance your home or to maybe buy a new property. Again, thank you for listening to the podcast. If you liked what you heard, do me a favor. This is a free podcast. The one thing I ask of my audience is to leave me a review. This just helps me to get better and better guests, to let more people know about this show so they too can benefit from the Jimmy Rex Show. Thank you again for listening, and we will talk to you on the next episode.